Morning Rush continues with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
.907, how you doing this morning? I just down the hall and I overheard the sports guys talking about the city budget, specifically the cost of renting ice and how much it's going up. And there's just so many areas in that budget. You know, the city's presenting like, hey, only a 2% increase. Plus, you know, the transit thing. Oh, it also will add some to the garbage collection and the, wait a second, isn't that what property tax is supposed to pay for all these things? So you add all the increases in the things you can't avoid, and I figure it takes it to about a 3% increase. And then the stuff that is avoidable but kind of nice to be able to utilize, like soccer fields and hockey rinks, and the prices of all of those things going up as well. So not inexpensive to rent ice time these days, and that's going to go up too. Anyway, but we'll use some of the money to build more bike lanes, and that is what matters. Whatever sacrifice you have to make. Sure, you're not attached to the city water supply and you're going to have to pay that new stormwater fee, but it doesn't matter. Your money will build more bike lanes. I'm not against people cycling to work. I think it's a very small segment of society that can do that in a very short period in your life. I mean, there's no excuse for Matt Harris here, our producer, not to ride his bike. Actually, there's a bit of an excuse. It's too close even to ride a bike.
Yeah, I just walk.
But if I lived where you lived, in the market area, I'd probably use my bike a fair amount to get around. Mm-hmm. But I live in Manitowoc, so I'm not going to be cycling. But once you and your girlfriend, we got to get her in here, by the way, to help her with her walk.
Yes.
Because she's doing a charitable thing, right?
Yes.
And she came to us for money. I don't want to give her money, but I will give her airtime.
Yeah, she's climbing Kilimanjaro.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell people how to connect to that.
I'll tweet out a link right now.
She's going to be in such shape.
Yeah.
Climbing Kilimanjaro.
Kick my ass,
bro. You can get a bicycle built for two, and you can be in the back.
Just
let her do all the pedaling.
No hands.
You're 200 pounds on the back of the bike. She's just huffing and puffing along. She's in shape now. She's going to be in awesome shape getting ready to climb Kilimanjaro. Anyway, but once you two, is my point, once you two, let's say, have your first baby, maybe you'll still live downtown. You're thinking about saving money for a little bungalow somewhere, but for now you're going to live downtown. You'll be able to ride your bike until it's your turn to take the baby to daycare.
Yes.
Now you need a car.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's not as practical.
So for commuters, people with families, guys who need the car for business, people who have meetings and they have no facilities. I talked to someone on the weekend about this who said he's a cyclist. He loves it. He does it on weekends and to keep in shape. He said, I never take my bike to work because he's one of the owners of a business. He said, I have meetings all day long and I get all sweaty and you know, we'd have to renovate to put in showers and bike stalls. And there are some buildings that are doing that already, but they look at it and go, well, there are not enough cyclists for us to warrant paying that kind of money. So it's always going to be a very small percentage of the population. Then there's something called January here, where even if you're a real avid cycler, it's like, okay, I got to drive now because take the bus because it's just, I can't ride in the snowstorm. You see, a few people tough it out. You know, I admire them and think they're stupid all at the same time. We spend so much money on the infrastructure for what could inevitably only be very few people, very small percentage of people. We take away space from cars and we tighten up traffic. And look what we've done with the O'Connor bike lanes. We've designed them in such a way, instead of making cyclists safer, the reason we built bike lanes is because it was assumed if people felt safer to cycle into work, they would cycle. And I think that's true. I think there's an element of that. Oh, it's just not safe sharing the roads. When you're up against the curb and you're sharing the lane with cars, it can be pretty scary. I get that. So we made this assumption. We put in bike lanes and it would be safer. But I think what bike lanes have done is empower cyclists to ignore the rules even more than they did before. You know, they never could make up their mind. Am I a pedestrian who's moving really fast or am I a motor vehicle who's moving relatively slowly? When they want the right of way, then they're a vehicle. When they want to go through the stop sign of the red light, then remember, it's a pedestrian. I'm not a car driver here. And these bike lanes make them feel like they can go faster, that they have to pay attention to traffic around them less. And then we put in these strange designs like the one in O'Connor, where you've got a one-way street. And on the left side, as you're driving along, they put in a two-lane narrow bikeway. And of course, what we saw yesterday, and we heard the sound from the video, we got a cyclist videotaping as they come towards traffic. about to enter an intersection and you see a van make a left turn from the left lane, so there's no oncoming traffic for him except cyclists, turns left and hits a cyclist who's coming up behind him, which is a very unnatural thing for a driver to think someone's going to pass you on the curb to your left. And this is what happened. Ooh, and you can see, didn't hit the vehicle that hard, but he took a spill.
Watch where you're going.
You hear the hit there.
You okay, buddy? You just passed him. You knew he was coming.
Blames the van driver right away. You just passed him. You knew he was coming. Yeah, that's right. He did it on purpose. Oh, there's a bike. I hate that. I've been listening to the Bill Carroll show. I hate those guys. Doom! Knocked him. That's not what happened. He made a mistake. He had his turn signal on, and then he turned. He's been charged. So a lot of people say that proves that he's in the wrong. Maybe he made a mistake, but that doesn't help save lives in the future because this is a mistake that's easy to make, that a lot of people are going to make. And if you're the cyclist and you're going along in that bike lane, you're approaching an intersection and the van has the turn signal on, don't you stop yourself. I know you have the right of way, but don't you stop anyway. Don't you slow down massively. So I think the fundamental design of these kinds of bike lanes aren't making cyclists safer. They're creating more dangerous conditions because cyclists are being more careless and drivers are being forced to do things that they're not trained to do. They're being put into these extraordinary situations where the unexpected keeps happening. And if you use that street regularly, you'll eventually get used to it, I suppose, but we're always going to have people using that street for the first time, or they use it very rarely, and we're going to have more and more of these cyclists hurt. And how many are we going to have before the city recognizes, yeah, there's some fundamental flaws? We got excited. We opened the O'Connor bike lanes a month early, but look what's happened since. Once a week, a cyclist has been hit. We're just lucky so far no one's been killed.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
So I was talking about this O'Connor bike lane and another accident, 3 in 3 weeks, and I got an email from Avery Burdett, Responsible Cycling Coalition. And in the email, Avery said some of the things I did about, you know, you got these bike lanes. It actually seems to make cyclists even more reckless the way they ride, and it's confusing for cars, although Avery didn't say that. But did say, you know, we told people 6 years ago at the city this was a bad idea. Avery's on the line right now. How you doing?
Good morning, Bill. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. I was surprised that you went so far as to say the experienced cyclists that you know actually avoid bike lanes.
Correct.
Why?
Because of exactly what you just said. They're inherently dangerous, the design of them. Experienced cyclists, not just in Ottawa, but also in Europe, they cycle with traffic and they learn the rules of the road. And they follow the same rules of the road as a driver of a motor vehicle. And they feel very comfortable mixing in traffic, and they do not want their journeys to be complicated by these, which are very complicated bike lanes, especially one on O'Connor Street.
What's complicated about it?
Well, it's complicated trying to turn west, for example. Let's take O'Connor. If I'm going north or south, on the right side of the road, I've got to cross one-way traffic to turn westward. In order to do that, what the city is doing is encouraging cyclists to turn right and then ride across traffic, either where there's traffic lights, but they're not traffic lights at every intersection. So you've got these complicated maneuvers that they're asking cyclists to make. And this is experienced cyclists. I rode down O'Connor before it was open, and I just shook my head. I rode down it in the right-hand lane, and I was not tooted. I rode with traffic. I followed the same rules as the drivers of vehicles. And drivers in Ottawa are pretty respectful. I've ridden all over Europe. I still do. I go there every year, more than once. And it doesn't matter where you are in a city, you're going to have to mix with traffic. So once you accept the fact that you have to mix with traffic, then you're going to have to follow rules. And unfortunately, what the city is doing, it's crazy. It's irresponsible. They're encouraging, or at least they're promoting cycling among new and inexperienced cyclists, and they're telling them right to work. And right to work, we call this.
Yeah, you have your own designated lane. It's safer than it's ever been.
Yeah, it's this is serious business, riding in traffic. When you're a kid, I've got grandchildren. I'm teaching them how to ride in traffic. They're ages 9 to 12. But when my sons grew up, they had cyclist ed. I went through with them and taught them cyclist ed. Just would you put a son or a daughter in a car without cyclist ed these days? Why is cyclist different? In fact, cyclists are more vulnerable than drivers, motorists, and yet they get no training at all.
You know, you're saying something I hadn't thought about before, and that is that when we were kids, we rode our bikes just as a matter of course, right? You got a bicycle when you were pretty young, and it was freedom, and you zipped around your neighborhood, and your parents told you to stay off the main streets, ride the sidewalks if you had to, and then before you went out on the main streets, you would have a talk with your mother or father. But we also had cops come to the school. They used
Correct.
To do safety checks on the bikes to make
Absolutely.
Sure we had reflectors, and if we were going to use it at night, we had to have a light, and they would talk about basic bicycle safety and how to obey the rules of the road. So, you know, that's too many years ago to mention, but, you know, going back to the 70s and 80s, now we encourage people as a matter of public policy to ride bikes, but I never hear my kids say that, hey, a nice police officer came to safety inspect my bike and talk about how to ride the road safely. It seems like you're right. We're doing less.
There's nothing. And when I grew, you grew up in Scotland, I started my life in England, and we either had parents or we had older siblings who would take us into residential streets to learn how to ride, to learn how to operate, and then you would graduate up into busier roads, and eventually you'd ride in town among busier traffic, and you would follow the rules of the road.
So what are you saying then? We should, as a matter, if this is going to be public policy to encourage people off, out of their cars and onto bikes, that we should institute a policy for schools to have bicycle training for kids?
In the long term, absolutely. By the way, just to correct you there, these people are not coming off out of cars to ride their bikes. They're people that previously walked to work or they took OC Transpo. OC took a survey some time ago, probably years ago now, what cyclists did in the winter when they put their bikes away, and they took the bus. They don't have cars, these people. They're, by and large.
So we don't get any cars off the road by
no,
adding.
No.
But Mayor Jim Watson says this every time he's interviewed about this. He said, hey, it's better for drivers, too, because it means fewer cars on the road.
You know what? That's a myth. And what's more, anything that comes out of City Hall from politicians is bad advice when it comes to cycling. There's some people there. There's an anti-car culture among certain councillors at City Hall, and they've appointed themselves experts on cycling. I've watched one councillor you have in your program. I've watched how bad he is when he gets on his bike. He rides in the door zones of cars. He rides up the right side of moving traffic in tiny little narrow parts. He in his self-promotion, he puts his own videos on YouTube. I can't believe it. And these people claim to represent cyclists. They do not know what they are talking.
Are you saying Jeff Leeper is a bad cyclist?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I've seen his videos.
He's quick to blame drivers. He's quick to put a protest together drivers for these accidents.
He put a video up. I hate making it personal, but he put a video up of himself riding in a crosswalk at traffic lights. It's illegal to ride a bicycle in a crosswalk. Yet he just went flying through. He was filming somebody else with a GoPro, I guess, camera, and he just rode through like everybody else. There was a big group of cyclists in front of him.
Do you have any thoughts about pedestrians and how they interact with these new bike lanes on O'Connor and other places? My experience with it has been that pedestrians are used to checking one way, where the closest traffic is, before they step out, and there are bikes coming in both directions. I'm really
Absolutely.
Worried about pedestrians being hit because of these bike lanes.
It's all road users. It's pedestrians on the sidewalk. You figure that that van driver that you watched on that video that you've been talking about, he has to get into that left lane if he's going to make a left turn. He has to watch for two-way cycling traffic, and he has to watch for pedestrians. All three of them, are moving at a different speed. So this becomes very complicated for every user, pedestrian, cyclist, and drivers, who are being, by the way, who are being blamed and being asked to change their habits. By changing their habits, they're changing the rules of the road. And they're teaching cyclists very, very bad habits, because now cyclists think the only place they should be on the road is up the right-hand side of cars. And that's the young woman that got killed on Laurier Avenue, in fact, was riding up the right side in the blind spot of a truck driver. And the truck driver got charged for that.
Well, you see, I only ride recreationally with my kids in the neighborhood, but I'm a motorcyclist. And
correct.
What I do on a motorcycle is, while I have the right of way going through an intersection, if there's someone in the left lane that's waiting for me to pass before they turn, I slow down and I cover the front and back brake, assuming that every car is going to turn in front of me.
Yes,
and I'm prepared to stop or make an emergency maneuver to avoid them. I assume that they're going to turn. It looks to me like these bike riders are assuming now they got their bike lanes that they're safe. It's like, we put up a shield. And I didn't see that cyclist slow down or assume that car, that van might turn in front of them.
Bill,
and you have to, because it doesn't matter if you're right, if you're also dead.
Yes, well, Bill, they've offered, this is the worst thing, is those those bike lanes require a higher level of skill to navigate them. And what you said about driving a motorbike, in those bike lanes, they've got a false sense of security, and you've got inexperienced cyclists. You put those two together, and that's a deadly combination. As for your motorcycling, my two sons, or at least my youngest son, by the time he got his motorbike, his first motorbike, and he's still a motorbike fan, he knew exactly how to maneuver because he followed the same rules as we do on a bicycle. Exactly the same. The only thing is he's going faster, but he still has to move out to the left to make a left turn on a two-way highway or road. And experienced cyclists follow the rules of the road as they have been taught. The city now is changing the rules of the road, and they're playing with the lives of cyclists. Naive cyclists, inexperienced cyclists that think they're safe but are not.
Great perspective. Thanks, Avery.
Thank you, Bill. By the way, Bill.
Yes, sir.
You're a Scotsman, right?
That's right. Born in Glasgow.
I thought I'd call you Jimmy rather than Bill.
Everybody in Glasgow's called Jimmy.
I know. I got Scottish friends. They're all called either Hamish or Jimmy.
Thank you, Avery.
Good.
Avery Burdett with the Responsible Cycling Coalition. It's a nickname. You know, like you call somebody Bud or Dude or...
Is that how it works? Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy, what are you doing over there? Jimmy, what's going on? If you don't know the guy's name, you just call him Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy, what are you doing? Well, Jeff Leeper won't be happy, but I think that Avery made a lot of very interesting points. Coming up next, Evan Solomon, the National Affairs Specialist for Bell Media and host of CTV's Question Period. We'll talk about big meeting today. Wouldn't you love to be there? Just sitting in the background as President Obama, don't elect this guy, he's out of his mind. And the guy who is out of his mind, Donald Trump, sit down and have a conversation for the first time. That would be something else. This is The Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.
Now back to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Our Responsible Cycling Coalition guy made me think, I got to see if they're, just quickly see if there are any studies. Because he said, you build these designated bike lanes, it doesn't get people out of their cars, it gets them off transit or stops them from walking. So I just did a quick check. Ryerson University did a study looking at the impact of a particular street in Toronto, Sherbourne Street, and the bike lane. And it's really interesting to read the article because according to this study, most new cyclists were using transit before, 55%. Fewer than 24% potentially switched from driving, is what the article said. Fewer than 24. But then it went on to say, that's really impressive getting so many people out of cars. What? And the overcrowded transit system. Well, that's not the goal. The goal is not to get people out of overcrowded transit. And less than 24% is not quite so impressive, is it, given the money we spend on them? Anyway, that's just one study, and it looked at one street, and not in Ottawa, but in Toronto. It's 9:39.
And now the national affairs specialist for Bell Media and host of CTV's Question Period, Evan Solomon.
Big meeting today, Evan. President Obama will meet with Donald Trump at the White House, and I would love to be the old proverbial fly on the wall for that one.
I think it's going to be, let's just say, as polite as can possibly be. There is no bromance here. It's been quite clear that Obama doesn't like Trump, and that Trump doesn't like Obama. But look, Obama didn't like Bush and vice versa. Peaceful transitions of power. There are so many protests in cities. I mean, I know they're unhappy with Trump. It's not like, you know, he won the election fair and square. I know they're protesting, but, you know, that's what the election was all about. He won. And, you know, you hope that Obama does everything in his administration's power to make this a smooth transition of power. But as you say, I don't know if after this meeting there's going to be like a Christmas card exchange.
No, I kind of doubt it. But they're probably not going to have some kind of argument or a brawl in the office. But I wonder if President Obama will bring up Hillary Clinton and charges against her. Will he pursue her in some way? You think they'll discuss any of those policies or just simply, look, this is my chief of staff. When you decide on your chief of staff, have the meet. Here's what we're going to do. It'll just be all logistical.
All logistical. Look, Trump won based on dismantling Obama's entire legacy, Obamacare, everything. I don't think that it's Obama's place to then tell him what to do and how to proceed. I think it would be very out of line for him to do that. I think it's going to be, as you say, as gracious and as formal, but, you know, it's not going to be personal. I mean, and if it does, boy, I mean, we probably would never know about it, but Trump may say something about it. That'll be interesting. The most interesting thing will be, what does Donald Trump say about it all? Because, you know, I don't think Obama's going to say anything out of the ordinary, but who knows with Trump? Who knows?
Do you think President Obama's going to pardon Hillary Clinton on the way out the door?
What does she need pardoning for? She's not charged with anything.
Yeah, but he can, and it's been done before where presidents have pardoned people on the way out for. Nixon was pardoned not just for what he was suspected of doing, but for anything that he may have done illegally while he was in the White House. So it can be done. I think the president will.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you'd pardon her for. I mean, like, she's not up on any charges. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know if you can do a preemptive thing. I've never heard of that. Maybe you're right. I don't know. But she's not charged with anything, so I don't know if he does anything like that.
Yeah, I think he can, and I think that he will. Let's talk about Obama's legacy. Because, you know, people have been asking me by email, do you think you can really tear down everything the president did? His most important piece of legislation was what has now been called Obamacare. He has the Senate and he has the House on his side on this one. I think they will tear it apart, and I think they'll do it very quickly. And I also think a lot of the other things that Obama did, because the political system was paralyzed and he couldn't get the House or Senate on board, he used a lot of what they call executive orders. And executive orders can make some pretty substantial changes to policies, but they're just as easily taken apart with another executive order. So I think you're going to see Obama's legacy torn apart in the first 100 days.
Oh, for sure. 100%. I think very quickly Obamacare is toast. The Senate and the House have said so. He's going to rip that apart. I don't know what he's going to replace it with. I don't know if there may be some attempt to reform it, but I think that's gone. I think we'll see what happens in Syria. We'll see what happens in terms of NATO demands on other NATO countries. We'll see how fast he decides to rip apart NAFTA. I mean, the first 100 days could be very wild because he has very few checks and balances, and especially on foreign policy. That'll be interesting. But yeah, I think Obama's legacy, and by the way, the Paris climate commitment, which is very influential for Canada as we impose a cost on carbon. He may pull out of that almost immediately as well. So you're right. 8 years of Obama is going to melt away real quick.
Yeah, and we talked about it yesterday. We still don't know which Donald Trump we're going to really see as president. Will he be the one who is going to build walls and Mexico's going to pay for it? Is he going to be a guy who's going to imprison Hillary Clinton, or is he the one who thanked her for her service and looked almost presidential yesterday or the day before, I guess, late at night, early in the morning, looked almost presidential, said all the reassuring things. I'm going to be the president for all Americans. We don't really know how extreme he's going to be as an actual governor, right?
No, we don't. I'm on that charges for Hillary Clinton. I don't think he pursues that. I think that would be a foolhardy attempt to pursue charges. And the other thing is that's where the limits of his power run up. You know, the president doesn't have the authority to order the FBI or the judicial system to do that. There's actually an independent judiciary. So, well, he said he would do that and appoint a special prosecutor. Actually, he can't do that. That's not in the purview of the president to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate a political opponent. There would be an uproar. To me, Trump dumps that. He doesn't need to fight Hillary Clinton anymore, and he doesn't.
I'm not so sure. You heard those people chanting jail Obama yesterday. There are a lot of people who elected him expecting him to carry through on some of those promises that you and I heard as hyperbole, exaggerations to make the point. But every time we thought he'd do that and he got a chance to back down, he'd always say, no, I meant it literally. So I don't know. I mean, should we just believe he is who he says he is?
Yeah, in my view, I think you take him seriously on NAFTA. You think you take him seriously on Obamacare, but not on that. I mean, that's my – but look, everything we thought about Obama is wrong. The idea that now that we're going to predict the right things about Obama after predicting the wrong things about Obama.
Right, you mean Trump.
I mean about Trump, rather. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. He may do it. I think it would be a pointless exercise and one that stretches the boundaries of the presidency's reach because it cuts into the independent judiciary. But could he try? It's Donald Trump. Welcome to the world. I don't think he does, but you're right. He could.
Yeah, interesting scene in New York with all the protesters there. There were protesters in other cities throughout the U.S., but just fascinating to me that they've got to try to secure Trump Towers. That's where the president-elect lives, and it's in the middle of Manhattan. And how do you secure – you've been to Manhattan. The traffic there is crazy at all times of day and night, and they've got to cordon off part of this street and put in anti-blast barriers. And it's going to be, I would think, in Manhattan from now until he's sworn in and moves into the White House, it's going to be a crazy scene there, isn't it?
Crazy scene for the next, 71 days? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I haven't done the math, but
71 days of, as you say, it's going to get very, very, very extreme. I just don't think these protests hold up. I know it's a very divided country. I just hope that people, he won the election fair and square. For all his talk about a rigged election, it wasn't rigged. It was fair and square. You don't like him, you got 4 years. Get rid of him then, but you got to give the guy a chance. He won. That's the story here. That's called democracy, folks.
You think that they will ever get around to reforming a system that we hear every 4 years almost? Hey, the popular vote went one way, the Electoral College went the other way. Donald Trump himself called it a joke, said it's a ridiculous system. Of course, it worked for him, and it looks like Hillary will probably beat him in the popular vote when it's all tallied. I think that there will always be complaints about it, but that system is never going to change, and I'm not convinced our parliamentary system is going to change here either.
Yeah, I don't think they changed the Electoral College. I think everyone whines about it after they lose, they win the popular vote and lose the Electoral College vote. They may change, but with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, wishful thinking, no chance for that.
Well, there's also this assumption that if we went with the popular vote, then Hillary Clinton would be president. Well, you can't say that because if you know going into a campaign that the popular vote is what matters, you campaign totally differently. You don't campaign in a certain state where you know you got a better chance to steal some Electoral College votes. You don't do that. In a parliamentary system, you don't spend as much time in one particular riding as you might have because you think you can steal that riding. You conduct a completely different campaign, so you can't say that he's not a valid president because he didn't get the popular vote. He played to the system, and he played it better than she did. It's that simple.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. You and I are in agreement this morning, my friend.
Thank you, Evan.
Thanks.
Evan Solomon, catch him today on Ottawa Now as he drives you home. 2 to 6, right here on CFRA. All right, coming up next, we have a very special guest. Yesterday was We Day in Ottawa, big event out of Canadian Tire Centre. Sold out, toughest ticket in town. School kids from across the city poured in, and we assigned a special reporter, Killian Carroll. Will join us, yes. Sixth grade student Killian Carroll will join us to tell us about We Day yesterday.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I'm just about done here. Rob Snow is coming up next. But before we're finished, one last thing to do. We assigned a reporter to cover We Day yesterday in Ottawa. I had no idea what We Day was. I started to hear this thing from my kids. You going to We Day? Are you going to We Day? Yeah, we're going to We Day. What is We Day? Is it like French for Yes Day? They're going to Yes Day. Or is it, I don't know, it sounds like some kind of video game. Is there a Wii video game? I didn't know. But it's just W-E, We Day. And the idea is to promote our children to think less about the me and more about the we. Okay, that's fine. So it's a huge event, sold out at the Canadian Tire Center. And we assigned CFRA's junior reporter, Mr. Killian Carroll, who is now back in class and joining us live on the phone. Good morning, Mr. Carroll.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Me too.
Did you guys learn about we and what it meant for, I don't know, some time in class, weeks or days or something before you went to the We Day yesterday?
Yeah, we learned about what it means, the group that we were in, and it was just very inspiring.
Inspiring how? What did it inspire you to want to do?
It inspired me to think less about me and think more about other people.
Okay, that was that kind of the main message of it?
Yes.
And what kind of things do they encourage you to do to help other people?
They encourage to recycle, just help other communities who need it more than you.
Yesterday was, for you, one of the first times you've been at a big event like this without your parents with you, right? I mean, you had your cell phone, you had a little bit of freedom, you had to travel in pairs, but that must have been a big day for you to be out at that event, almost by yourself, right?
Yeah, it was really fun.
Did it make you a little nervous to be in a big crowd like that?
Yes and no. Because it was a lot of people, and when I went outside, it was a lot of people, like, crowding. And no, because I knew I was with all my friends, so I was going to have a good time.
Well, just be happy you didn't have to try to drive out of there afterwards, because that would have been pretty tough. Now, what was it like when the Prime Minister came out on stage? I watched it on live streaming video. And he got a big cheer. What did it feel like to see your prime minister right there in the same room talking to you?
It was really fun. We had no idea, so it was quite a surprise. So it was just, everyone was just screaming. It was really loud in my ears.
I bet. Here's what the prime minister said from the main stage at We Day yesterday in Ottawa.
The relationship between Canada and the United States is based on shared values and shared hopes and dreams, and we will always work well together. We are strong because we listen to each other and we respect each other.
Were you guys talking about Donald Trump's election and all the kids from the classroom?
Yeah, everyone was sad and mad at the same time.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I can see the political leanings in your classroom already. And did Justin Trudeau talk a lot about Donald Trump?
Well, yes, he mentioned that he will talk with his people who organize everything and try to make everything good.
Okay, that's a good summation. Who else was there that got you excited to see speak?
Maggie Trudeau was there. A lot of Canadian bands were there too, which is really cool. And, yeah.
Well, thank you for giving us a full report. We appreciate it. And, next time you'll be at Canadian Tire Center will be tomorrow night. So now I'm going to make you a sports reporter. Kings versus Senators. Who do you like in this game?
Definitely the Kings.
Yeah, well, the Kings are playing tonight in Montreal. Don't you think they might be a little tired?
Maybe, but I doubt it.
You're going to wear a Kings jersey, aren't you?
Definitely.
Yeah, thought so. Thank you, Killian.
Okay.
Okay, say hi to your class for me.
Yep. Bye.
Killian Carroll, CFRA junior reporter on yesterday's We Day. I thought he could fill in for me while I was away, but the problem is, you know, we go away, he comes with us.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but we could leave him behind. Yeah, that could work. I'll take a long weekend. Let him come into work for a change. Then I'd have to go to his classroom. I wouldn't like that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty much done
with
school.
They'd send you to We Day.
Rob Snow is coming up next. This has been The Morning Rush. I'm Bill Carroll.